Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:24 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 16th. We had a pretty significant move off the lows in here today, and I'm looking at the Dow Jones because it was down several hundred points and then reversed it and closed at a new all-time high. And this is also confirming support in the region of the upper side of the underlying range. So it's a pretty significant development. And I think that's particularly true when we look at the VIX. I was feeling rather foolish having closed my short in the S&P this morning when I saw the VIX pop on the upside. I was feeling like I'd covered on exactly the wrong day. And then we saw the VIX reverse its earlier advance and close down off the open up on the day. The one thing that's been quite apparent over the course of the last year is that the S&P 500 hasn't pulled back by more than 5% since October, and that each of the new of the highs has been lower than the last since then. So we had a brief flurry of activity in July, and subsequently the VIX has come all the way back down. And there was speculation, at least earlier this morning, that the rather big difference between the price of calls and puts was indicative of there being a lot more demand for volatility protection than there was for any kind of demand for, or I guess, a play on volatility remaining very low, because there's obviously a very big disparity between the prices when you can get the in the money, or at least at the money puts, or excuse me, the at the money calls for 4.10 and the puts are 40 cents. That's a pretty big divergence. And of course, there's a lot to play for here. The one thing that became quite apparent over the course of this weekend is that my daughters, because they're starting in a new school, have been invited to lots of back to school parties. And there were three planned before next Monday. And two of them have been cancelled because of the Delta variant. And this, I think, is some of the most just personal experience of the Delta variant starting to have an effect on people's lives. So the kinds of things that we know are that it's more transmissible, which means it greatly increases the potential that we're going to come into contact with it. And then we know that people who are vaccinated tend to have a less severe infection. And perhaps more importantly, it doesn't stop them from becoming infected, but because their symptoms might be so mild, they may not even know that they have the coronavirus, and then they're at risk of passing it on to others. So there is certainly an added dimension to how quickly it can spread from that fact alone. So then it comes down to the question. If second quarter earnings have been particularly strong, then if we are going to have a flaring up in the number of cases and a more difficult environment with opening up and everybody getting back to normal because of the Delta variant, and there is then the two bills sitting in front of the US House, one for $950 billion infrastructure spending and another for $3.5 trillion in terms of next year's budget. Do rising numbers of Delta variant cases make the chances of those bills passing higher or lower? Well, I think that the stock market is betting that it makes it more likely that those bills are going to be passed. And then when we think about the oil price, well, it's also in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. And it was in negative territory today, but well off the low. So we continue to see at least near-term evidence of support around the $70 area, even though we're trading just below it right now. One thing I think is particularly relevant is that carbon credits in Europe were up in a dynamic manner in here today, and they're at the upper side of their range. So, in many respects, carbon is decoupling from oil. This is, it might be, I think there's a temptation to think, well, the price must be strong because of the economic recovery. But the reality is that it's a politically mandated rate. And in order for the price to be this high, it has to have a lot of support from the European governments, and most particularly the European Commission. And perhaps more importantly than all of that, they want to see prices to go up to 100. And that's obviously a rather high figure. So they want to see prices here at about 100 euros. Well, it took not much more, or not even a year yet, to go from 20 to 60. So they anticipate that they're going to see this trend continue to accelerate because they want to equalize the cost of carbon with the cost of carbon capture. So there are plans underway to build a large number of carbon capture facilities, and if all of them were to come to fruition, it would capture less than 1% of all the carbon emitted in a single year. So the scale of what's being proposed is truly epic. And in order to get there's going to have to be a lot of money spent, and that money's going to have to come from somewhere. So when even though we can think about companies like Royal Dutch Shell, and they are investing in this kind of infrastructure, and they're major gas producers rather than oil producers, and that's less polluting overall. Well, the share was down in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. And some of the larger oil companies did experience some selling pressure. And a lot of it has to do with the costs that are going to be imposed upon them as a result of these rising carbon prices, because we have not reached a terminal point. I think that's perhaps the most important point, that we're really only halfway to the kind of prices that the European Commission want for carbon. And when we start to think about the kind of money that's involved in building out carbon capture and redeploying assets to batteries and recharging facilities and renewable energy power generation, and all of the additional costs to try and tackle the intermittency of both wind and solar. Well, all of those costs will have to come from somewhere, and they'll likely be passed on to the industry, but then also to the consumer. So one way that they can achieve lower carbon emissions is lower economic growth. And obviously they don't want to talk about that, but that would appear to be baked in the cake if they're going to continue to weigh on heavy industry. Well, then there are companies like Drax in the UK, which has long been noted to have the last coal-fired power station. Well, it's firming from the region of the trend mean because they're investing in carbon capture, and it might even look like they might be able to make some money from it. Of course, there is the additional argument that you might be better off just investing in the kinds of companies that get to sell carbon credits. Then, of course, Vestas Wind Systems, they continue to build out these extraordinarily large wind turbines, and it's firming from the region of the trend mean. A large proportion of the renewable energy sector is right in the region of the trend mean, whether that is solar, wind, or uranium. They've all returned to test their respective trend means over the course of the last 6 months. And the uranium ETF was in negative territory today, so now it is right in the region of the trend mean, and this is exactly where, if demand is going to start to come back in, it would be mighty convenient if it were to come in soon. Of course, this isn't something that's just going to transpire over a couple of days or even a couple of weeks, because the market for carbon is likely to continue to move globally. Now, the illiquidity of the Chinese contract, which has only just been introduced, I think that really helps to emphasize the point that China's not that serious about decommissioning its emissions. What they're more interested in is making it look like they are very interested in towing the line in terms of emissions, because there is the potential that Europe will introduce laws that would increase the costs and tariffs on items that were manufactured with a lot of emissions overseas. And now, in one respect, that might be viewed as pioneering the interests of the planet, and on the other hand, it might just be considered to be protectionist. And certainly from the perspective of emerging markets, it will be viewed as protectionist. So we have some factors that are happening independent of the pandemic, and the carbon markets are certainly one of them. But gold, on the other hand, is certainly, I think, responding to the potential for additional money printing. And the price is up now in a dynamic manner over the course of the last week. We had a very long tail on the candle into the close on Friday. It's following through on the upside in here today. I think a lot of people will be a lot happier when gold is back above the $1,800 area and firming from that level. But certainly it's looking like we have a low of at least near-term and potentially medium-term significance. And this low is just very marginally above the nadir for the gold price put in March and April. So I continue to think that this is a just very big consolidation in the region of the all-time peak. And so far, the price has held up really rather admirably. And what's even more interesting, I think, is that gold shares have been beaten down. And they are at fractions of where they used to trade back in 2011 and 12 and 10. And investors don't want to give them the benefit of the doubt. But the reality is that they're trading on margins that you usually don't find outside of the software sector. And they have strong valuations and cash-heavy balance sheets. And the product that they're producing is at close to all-time highs and has the potential to do significantly better from where it is right now. So obviously there is a value proposition here that isn't, I think, being really appreciated by the market, because there's still a lot of people are much more focused on growth. And when bond yields are so low, and the yield was well off its lows in here today, but we don't have a lot of evidence yet that the yield is about to trend higher. But if it can follow through on the upside tomorrow, well, then that would be very clearly a higher reaction low. So it will have broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it will have put in a higher reaction low. That's the beginning of a new uptrend. So if we get upside follow through tomorrow in the yield, then that would suggest that inflationary pressures are starting to get priced in, and that the US government might not have all its own way in massively increasing the supply of money. At least there might be repercussions in terms of demand for those bonds, because we're talking about an epic supply of new bonds that would be coming into the market. And of course, the Federal Reserve will be expected to buy them. And of course, that will greatly impinge upon the central bank's independence. They've always feigned total independence, but even that fig leaf in terms of their the sway that the government holds over the Federal Reserve is going to be questioned, as they are called upon to buy even more bonds, trillions more bonds. Of course, if we are going to see lots more supply of bonds, then that will represent a significant increase in the supply of dollars. So the dollar was a little bit steadier in here today, and not least because of that early weakness in the stock market. But then the bigger question from a currency perspective is, how are other countries doing relative to the USA in regard to their efforts to control the Delta variant? So I think it's pretty even with the EU. Then commodity producers like Australia, they've been range-bound relative to the dollar over the course of the last month, but still weak overall, and we have medium-term resistance in the region of 80 cents. So we're not quite yet at a point where there is any one currency is going to be the standard bearer for to take the other side of a dollar bear market. The Chinese renminbi was, however, a little bit steadier in here today. Now, high yield spreads in China are rising, and that's pulling up high yield spreads in emerging markets. And high yield spreads in the USA are also now starting to move higher, but they're not doing so in a dynamic manner. Now, one thing that we have to, I think, also consider is that China is part of the global economy. It doesn't exist in its own dimension. And they've had an epic demand for dollar funding over the course of the last decade. Much of the growth over the last decade has been built on debt. So there have been some efforts to support China Evergrande, and that represented a bounce for the share last week, but then it started giving it up again on Thursday, and it was in negative territory again in here today. And what happens in terms of China Evergrande is going to have a bearing on the Hong Kong property sector. So it's been pulling back over the course of the last while. But one of the repercussions of the clear intention of the Chinese government to intervene in speculation in the domestic property market is that some of that hot money is now flowing into Hong Kong. So originally there was a flurry of activity a few years ago and a lot of speculation in the tier one cities. So then there were measures introduced to stop people investing in those tier one cities, and they moved out to the hinterland and into the tier three cities. And we had significant advances in prices there. So now there are measures underway to stop people bidding up the price of property in those tier three cities. So that hot money is going to Hong Kong. And obviously Hong Kong also has access to dollar funding. So there's the potential then that the property companies in Hong Kong will do better from here. But of course they are being, they have the millstone around their necks of what's going to happen in terms of China Evergrande, because China Evergrande's bonds and the high yields they command are pulling out spreads for the entire emerging market universe. When we look at some of the better performing markets in Asia, Vietnam continues to steady and continues to pull away from the region of the trend mean. The Nifty index in India remains in a bull market overall. And when we think about Mexico, I continue to think it's going to be one of the bigger beneficiaries of any kind of continued, increase in the stress between the USA and China. And the MSCI Mexico ETF is now in the cusp of breaking what's effectively been a 7-year downtrend. When we think about Australia, well, it's in the crosshairs of China because of its calls for an independent inquiry into the origins of the coronavirus and the reluctance of the administration to stand down from that. The Australian dollar remains steady, but the stock market continues to push on the upside. And it's benefiting from the continued supply of liquidity and low interest rates, and then the growth of the demand for resources. And that is likely to continue to act as a positive support for the market overall. And it's still in a consistent trend with a series of ranges one above another. So we're a little overbought in the short term, but it remains a bull market overall. And then when we think about the New Zealand market, it had been one of the best performers in 2020. And there have been legions of people who have been investigating how to move to New Zealand because it's often viewed as one of the most politically secure and easier places in the world to live. And the stock market, having pulled back sharply in 2020, quickly moved on to a new all-time high, and it's been consolidating now in the region of the trend mean. Well, part of the reason why we've had a pullback has, in many respects, been because of the significant volatility we've had in companies like A2 Milk, which was one of the investor favorites all the way through from its genesis in 2015 to the peak in 2020. And it's just beginning to give some evidence of support starting to come through. One thing that I think is rather relevant about some of these meme stocks like Coinbase is that they are capable of getting brief flurries of activity. So Coinbase popped on the upside last week and then started coming back down again over the last few days. And that's despite the fact that it beat earnings by expectations by a wide margin in the second quarter. And one might anticipate that it should do better if Bitcoin continues to rally from here. When, and I didn't type that correctly. So when we think about Bitcoin, the potential is that, and it was notable today that the entire cryptocurrency universe exceeded 2 trillion again. So we've had significant outperformance of the altcoins relative to Bitcoin in order to achieve that while Bitcoin's price is still around the 45,000 level, rather than when we were at that same designation of 2 trillion back in March when it was Bitcoin was leading the way forward. In order to get Bitcoin up above the 60,000 level, well, it would have to encourage a great deal of additional new money. So that new money has to come from somewhere. It either has to come out of other assets or it has to be because there's lots of new money printed. Well, the stock market is betting that that money is going to be printed and that that we're still in this sort of grisly Goldilocks our virus Goldilocks situation. Whereas Bitcoin is still pausing here in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range. So ideally, the reaction will be limited to something that we saw similar to what we saw at the end of July. If on the other hand, it pulls back down into that couple of month base formation, well, then we would have to conclude that we've seen resistance encountered in the region of the overhead trading range and that we're still in a corrective environment overall. And the emotionality of the market, it feels like that when it goes up, you feel great, and when it comes back, you don't, because the size of the moves are rather extraordinary. But so far, this is a relatively similar sized pullback. And as long as that remains the case, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral arranging. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.